The San Antonio Spurs have kicked off the second round of the NBA playoffs with a 126-99 loss as the Spurs fell to the Rockets Monday evening at home in the AT&T Center by 27 points. 27 doesn't even explain how big the lead was for Houston, as the Rockets ended up leading by 39 points in the Spurs' home court building. So Houston takes game one. They take the home court advantage for the series. So now not only does San Antonio have to try to win game two to make sure this thing doesn't go into a sweep, but also now San Antonio has to go into Houston and try to get a game in either game three or four at minimum. So let's go ahead and break this game down. I'm Paul Garcia of ProjectSpurs.com. Please be sure to follow us on Twitter and also visit the website as well. Let's go through this, what was basically a slaughter of the Spurs on their home floor by the Rockets, and you have to give credit to Houston, as we'll see here. Okay, so usually the key playmakers to start off this segment, there's usually three players. It's usually a mixture of somebody like Kawhi, Tony Parker, and LaMarcus Aldridge. Unfortunately, though, for the Spurs, it was only Kawhi Leonard who was really their key playmaker, and even as good as Leonard is, the Rockets' defensive game plan and him not having a lot of support from the outside around him really hampered his minutes, and he really didn't even play in the fourth quarter. It was already a blowout within the first 18 minutes of the game. So let's just go ahead and break down Kawhi's game a little bit. He finishes with 21 points and 14 shots, shoots 36%, so it's not his usual efficient average, and that kind of shows it. Credit's going to go to Trevor Ariza, as I'm going to explain in a little bit, but also just, you know, when a team's down 20-30 points, it's tough for their star to get going. He got to the free throw line eight times, made all eight free throws. He contributes six assists for his teammates on the shots that they actually did make. He shot 3 of 7 from three, not a great efficient number right there. And then he only played 32 minutes, as I said. He only played in three of the quarters. Okay, so first off, one guy who does deserve some credit is Ariza. Zach Lowe mentioned this on a podcast with Brian Windhorst, and then I went back and watched the film, and it kind of shows what Lowe was talking about. Ariza did a really great job of just denying Kawhi the ball. You know, Kawhi kind of got away with having a really good series in that first round because Tony Allen was out, where, you know, he's still a great player. He's going to put up great numbers either way, but, you know, he was kind of going against guys like James Ennis or who's the other kid, a rookie, Wayne Selden, and then a lot of that other stuff was like mismatches against young, older guys like Zebo and stuff like that. So he kind of got away with having a really great series in round one, despite Memphis trapping him and double teaming him a lot. He had hit a really good numbers, but now even though Houston's not better than Memphis defensively on paper, Ariza's a way better defender than what Memphis was throwing at Kawhi. So Ariza has those long arms. He's got a long wingspan. He plays really good positional defense. And like Lowe mentioned, he really did a great job of denying Kawhi the ball. He really stayed by Kawhi's hip a lot, as far as, like, if Kawhi was off the ball, he was kind of keeping him in check but not really helping off him a lot. And when Kawhi did try to catch the ball, Ariza made passes really difficult. Now, Kawhi got a few that he got, but there were some gambles where Ariza almost came through, and it could have been layups or dunks on the other end. So credit does go to Ariza, forcing him into some tough contested mid-range shots and three-pointers. Anytime he did try to attack the paint, he saw help defense from the Rockets as big men and their guards. One thing you notice when you're watching the film is that Houston does not respect a lot of San Antonio's three-point shooters, from Tony Parker to LaMarcus Aldridge to Pau Gasol, Danny Green. They really backed off them and just make sure that they're trying to take away the paint from Kawhi on any type of drive. Anytime Kawhi got like his old 3-5 pick and roll to the side, that Houston tried to ice it. They didn't necessarily try to trap it. They more iced it, where they kind of forced him to the baseline and forced him to give up the pass and didn't want to give him a driving lane. And, you know, when the Spurs do fall behind, it becomes nature when you're trying to play with a run and gun team to try to keep pace with them and try to, you know, basically chip at that lead. So you did see Kawhi have some mental errors, where he was kind of taking some shots really early in the shot clock when maybe he could have got better looks. There was a possession where he had like Lou Williams one-on-one. Instead of backing him down or trying to take him to the hole and get fouled, he just shot a contested three against Williams. And you know Kawhi would win that matchup, you know, 10 out of 10 times. But that's also, again, part of just the way the game was going. They were a little frantic, the Spurs, and they were rushing some shots. He saw triple teams at the rim. So anytime he did break down the defense, try to get to the rim, they collapsed immediately. They did not want to give him any points in the paint. And overall, for his team, he ended up dishing six assists, as I mentioned, and those assists counted for 15 points that his teammates converted. So Kawhi actually scores 30. He accounted for 36 of the Spurs' points in that game, which was 36% of their scoring. Now, his usual two backcourt mates that usually help him out are his supporting cast. They're Spurs' other two playmakers. Really didn't have a good game. Tony Parker. He finishes the game with He only plays 23 minutes. He scores 11 points, takes 9 shots. So obviously that's not an efficient number right there. He tallies 3 assists and he has 2 turnovers. So Parker, this is something, you know, he's gone up against a better defender now. He's playing a Patrick Beverley. Even though he kind of took it to Mike Conley, Beverly's a little bit better. One thing you saw from the Rockets is they went under mostly all of his screens. They left him wide open from three. So they obviously, even though he was shooting a great percentage in the first round against Memphis, the Rockets still don't see that as something that's really going to hurt them. So you could see them a lot of times just backing off Parker and going to send help toward a Kawhi or LaMarcus Aldridge or anybody that's driving in the paint. So Parker really needs to make them respect his three-point shot. So when he does get those opportunities, he has to make them at a high percentage so that Houston doesn't try to leave him with their guards and wing defenders. He actually got held. You know, this is the type of night it was for Parker. He actually got held several times by Lou Williams, of all people. Lou Williams isn't known as a great defender. And Parker went from a series where he was kind of sometimes getting by Mike Conley and scoring those little teardrops and floaters. And now, you know, he got blocked by Lou Williams, and Lou Williams took away some of his driving lanes. And then one thing you saw, just like with Kawhi, because Houston doesn't respect San Antonio's outside shooters, Houston packed the paint on any kind of Parker drives and really made it tough for him to get some of those little floaters or those little easy layups. One thing Parker does need to stay aggressive with is that mid-range pick and pop jumper. I mean, that mid-range jumper, because the Rockets are going over under all his screens, and they're not going to respect his shot unless he makes it. So one thing he should do, though, is if it is a last resort, dude, he should try to take that mid-range pull-up jumper if it's there and there's nothing else going on with LaMarcus or Kawhi. So Parker didn't have a great game there, finishing with 11 points. The guy that was pretty much the talk of the night was LaMarcus Aldridge, both from the fan perspective, from the media perspective. I mean, even the players got asked about it afterward. You know, it's a big playoff game. You know, a few years ago when he was with Portland, he had an epic series against the Rockets, really torched them. Obviously, the personnel is different now. They have Nene. They have a better Capella. Ryan Anderson wasn't on that team, but historically Marcus has done pretty well against Anderson and some of those guys in the past, especially when he was with the Blazers. As a Spur, the film and the numbers don't look great for him. So Kawhi plays 25 minutes, takes 7 shots, and finishes with, LaMarcus, I'm sorry. So he takes 7 shots and he finishes with 4 points. He stayed a little active on the glass with 6 rebounds, got 2 offensive boards, he needs to keep doing. He gets 1 assist and he turned the ball over twice. Again, the Spurs are not going to win the series if LaMarcus is giving them, you know, less than 13 points, which is his playoff average right now. It's not good for right now where he's at. He kind of waits a little bit too long, or if he does rush it, he kind of rushes right into double teams. The Rockets did a great job of kind of having a flash defender there in the paint just in case he did get by somebody. But a lot of it is just, it comes down to his aggressiveness. You know, he's going to get those open pick and pop jumpers, and he needs to find that mental rhythm, because they're going to be there. You know, Ryan Anderson, kind of like I said, the Rockets want to try to ice all of Kawhi's pick and rolls. So Aldridge is going to be wide open there from the elbow for his mid-range jumpers, and he obviously didn't hit him in game one. You know, Ryan Anderson is not known as a defensive player of the year candidate, and he kind of held him in check there. He made him take contested over the shoulder shots. He made him pass out whenever he did get close to the rim. And that just comes to a situation where Aldridge just needs to be a little bit more aggressive, you know, get to the free throw line, get into Anderson, try to put up, force a shot up at least, and get him in foul trouble. Because the more that Anderson's on the floor, the harder it is for the Spurs' defense because of his pick and roll ability to hit those long range threes. And Aldridge, you know, if his shot's not going in, he needs to continue to crash the boards. He got 2 offensive rebounds for some putbacks, and that's something he needs to do. And it just, it just comes down to aggressiveness. He needs to punish those mismatches. There was a possession where he had Patrick Beverley on him, and he tried to pass it out, and Beverley stripped him. There was a possession where he had James Harden in the post, and James Harden stripped him as well. You know, those are situations where he needs to either score those guys or get to the free throw line, get those guys in foul trouble. And like I said, it's just, I think one thing you're going to see for sure in game two is an adjustment where they're going to try to force feed Aldridge early. That's kind of something the Spurs have done when he's had some really bad games during the regular season. Is the next night they'll try to run like at least a majority of the first half of their plays through him, you know, in the post, or just trying to get him involved, try to get him an early rhythm, get him aggressive early. And they need him. You know, Kawhi can only be so good by himself, and Parker as well. And they need that he needs to be the second guy, but right now he's their third guy. They still need somebody else to help Kawhi. And Aldridge should be that guy, especially with the matchups. I mean, he should be okay against most of the Rockets defenders, except maybe like Nene, and it just didn't show. Here was an interesting stat. This stat right here explains how bad it was for Aldridge in this game one. So when he was on the court, the Spurs were minus 60 points per 100 possessions. They had a net rating of minus 60 with him on the court. When he goes to the bench, they were a plus 16.8 points per 100 possessions. So he was the only player that played in the game for San Antonio where if he was on the bench, it was actually a plus for the team. That's how bad of the night it was. I mean, not only was he getting torched on defense, you know, with the Rhino pick and pops and then, you know, Harden getting the rim against him and all this stuff, but on offense he was taking points away from them. I mean, it was a rough night for him. It's one game. Like I said, I think the adjustment is they try to focus on him, getting him going in game two early. That way he has a rhythm, and that way it's not all up to Kawhi and Parker to kind of create for everybody else. Overall, this is just a bad night for the Spurs. I mean, you have to give the Rockets credit, though. Their defense was good. They were scrambling. You know, they made a few mistakes, and the Spurs didn't capitalize on them. So San Antonio shoots 37% from the floor. They make only 9 of 29 three-pointers, 31%, and they got 29 looks from three. And again, the Rockets backed off their three-point shooters. They're not really respecting them. You saw Danny Green get a ton of attempts, and even he only converted, what was it, two of his 9 threes. Yes, the Spurs did get to the free throw line. Some of that is skewed data. They made 28 free throws on 36 attempts. Like a lot of that does go to the fourth quarter where they're kind of like their bench players were in the third, second, and third unit guys. So some of that is skewed data. Their main guys like LaMarcus never got to the line. He's a guy who needs to get to the line. Tony Parker did get to the line a lot. I think he got four free throws, and then Kawhi, of course, got 8. So they need to get, especially Aldridge. I think that's the guy that needs to try to get to the line as much as to help Kawhi out a little bit there. The Spurs collected 19 assists on 31 made shots. Again, the field goal percentage is really low, so the made shots are low. They did get 61% of their assist percentage. One thing you saw some success for them was when they moved the ball, as far as like getting the ball side to side, some driving kick action, some dribble weave action, or you know, their pick and rolls. They got to just do something to where they're making Houston's defense active, because when Houston's kind of set, they're okay. They're not, you know, they were ranked 18th defensively, but when they know where their guys at, their rotations, they're okay on that first movement, that first rotation. It's when you get them in their second and third rotation, when you get them scrambling, that's when you can kind of open up. You can see some lanes open up. You saw Parker get to the lane a few times and miss some layups, but you saw Manu get like some floaters in there. One thing the Spurs cannot do is turn over the ball against this team, and they did just that. They had 15 turnovers, and Houston made them pay 19 points. You know, any kind of turnover against the Rockets, it's not just against most teams, it's a 2, but against Houston, they're looking for a 3-point shot. They're not looking to just, hey, we got a turnover, we're going to dribble down and try to get a layup or a dunk. They're looking for that 3-point shot. Who can we get for an open 3? And that's their main focus. I mean, they actually missed a lot of those open transition 3s. So imagine if this lead could have ballooned maybe to 40, 45 had they made some of those transition 3s that were wide open. Much like the free throw data, the bench data is a little skewed as well. So the Spurs ended up, their bench ended up scoring the Rockets 51-42. And again, a lot of that was that their young guys in the fourth quarter kind of got some minutes, and so they kind of helped put some extra points on the board that were really basically not quality points, because the game was basically decided within the first 18 minutes. It was already over. You know, and the Rockets got, as I'm going to talk about a little bit, they got 60 points from just their starters alone. The two guys who are really important, I'm going to break them down a little bit, were Eric Gordon and Lou Williams for the Rockets there in that game. So the Spurs' offense, you know, had trouble. One thing they got to do, though, as Pop mentioned, was they got to try to slow the tempo. You know, you're not going to beat Houston as a fast break, you know, as at a track meet. We're trying to go run and gun with them. And that's something you saw San Antonio do. The Rockets would get a score. San Antonio try to run back, shoot an early shot on the shot clock. Take an early shot at the shot clock, they'd miss it, whether it's a mid-range look or a 3. There goes Houston the other way. And then, you know, for a few possessions, it'll work. But after a while, the lead's just going to balloon, because that's what Houston's built to do. They're built to run and gun. The Spurs are not. They have, you know, they have big guys. They have Deadman. They have Pau Gasol. They have Aldridge. They have Lee. And these guys are not run and gun type players. The Kawhi is more of a what you would call, like, I guess, like a, people call him like a Kobe type offensive player. So Kobe was always like a half court kind of player, kind of observe the defense, find the weaknesses and exploit them. And so that's what Kawhi needs to take his time as well. Parker as well as a pick and roll player. So Aldridge is a post-up player. So the Spurs don't have the personnel to run and gun. They're not going to win this battle if they try to run and gun with the Rockets. They can maybe do it for a few possessions, as I'll talk about in the game 2 adjustments, but their offense isn't built. So they got to right now, like Pop said, just try to play their game plan and see if that works. And if not, then you got to really, really adjust and adapt. On the 6 minutes increment chart, one thing I wanted to point out was, though, just like in the Memphis series, when Kawhi Leonard went to the bench, the Spurs' offense died. It was done. Like, they got outscored. That's how Memphis got into games. Now, against an even better team, the Rockets, who have so many other playmakers outside of Harden, it was over. So that those first 6 minutes of the second quarter, mostly with Kawhi resting, I think he played maybe 2 minutes of that span. The Rockets outscored the Spurs 21-6 by 15 points. And that was basically, the game was up to 20 by that point. By the time Kawhi was checking in, it was already like close to 18 or 19. And this is, again, with James Harden resting as well. You know, the Rockets have excellent playmakers. They have Eric Gordon. They have Lou Williams. They have Patrick Beverley, three ball handlers. Guys can run pick and roll. They can shoot threes. They can drive. They can do any kick out. And so this is where the Spurs are really going to be testing. When Kawhi goes to the bench, can they even stay close to the ball game, even with Harden off the bench? Because that Rockets group is just, there's so much scoring there. As you saw, they got outscored 21-6. And that again, cannot happen like it did against Memphis, because they're going to be toast in every game. Even if Kawhi's off the floor, then they're just not getting anything. So again, that's going to be a position where they're going to have to look to see if Aldridge can carry them, or Parker, for those first 6 minutes while Kawhi's kind of getting his resting break. And they have to keep it competitive because, as bad as the first quarter was, they kind of got back into it with that small ball for a little bit, for a little 2 minute stretch. But then, the second quarter, the game was over. So that's going to be something they're watching in game two, is how do they survive when Kawhi's taking a break? Shifting over to defense, this was obviously not a good night for San Antonio. They give up 126 points to the Rockets. Houston shoots 46% in an away building. They make 22 of 50 threes. They shoot 44% from three after shooting 29% against the Oklahoma City Thunder in round one. This was just, myself and a few other media members, we were downstairs watching the game after it was basically decided. So, we're just watching the film all together, and we're just talking, about the game. And we were actually, the Rockets were like at 42 threes, I think, like with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And we all start telling each other, are they really going to shoot 50? And sure enough, the more attempts they got, they just got up to 50. Obviously, they didn't make every single three. But that just shows you how bad of a night it was for the Spurs defensively. They cannot give Houston 50 threes, and if not, they're toast. It's just not going to work for them. The Rockets got to the line. They made 24, 27 free throws. Harden didn't get to the line a lot. He only had 5 free throws, but it didn't really matter. The game was already over within the first 18 minutes. On the boards, Houston wins the rebounding battle. They got 7 offensive rebounds. And something I had wrote about in the qualitative and quantitative preview was to watch how those long rebounds go. And sure enough, you saw Houston get a lot of those long rebounds because they shoot so many threes. Those rebounds are there for them to take. And then in transition, this is again, you try to run and gun with the Rockets, they're going to beat you at their game. That's their game. And sure enough, San Antonio lost that game. The Rockets end up scoring 27 points just in transition, whether that's layups, that's threes, that's again goes back to controlling the pace, slowing it down, and kind of just trying to execute, get a good shot a little bit later in the shot clock, as hard as it is. Because if you try to take a shot early with 18, 20 seconds left in the shot clock, that's it. You're done. The Rockets are going the other way. Something else to watch that the Rockets were very comfortable doing was they scored a lot also when the Spurs did make a bucket. So let's say San Antonio scored. The Rockets would quickly inbound and take off the other way. And San Antonio, their defense wasn't set in the half court. And sure enough, Houston got some of the looks that they wanted. Moving over to the Rockets' top three playmakers. James Harden finishes with 20 points on just 13 shots. A very efficient night for him. 14 assists for his teammates. So he got one thing the Spurs did, and Zach Lowe pointed this out as well on his podcast, and then the film showed it as well, is they tried to use those hedges against Harden, where LaMarcus would kind of hedge out to kind of slow him down so that way Kawhi could recover, or Danny Green. It worked kind of for a little bit in the first half against Nene and Capella, because they're basically rim rollers. They don't shoot. It does not work against Ryan Anderson, because anytime they try to hedge that pick and roll, Anderson got those wide open threes way outside where he likes to shoot from. So the Spurs' defense, again, it's going to be you cannot stop everything Harden's going to do. You're going to either have to give up one of those contested threes that he likes to shoot over the big guys. You're going to have to maybe let him try to just take away all his shooters and let him use like the Steve Nash principle, as far as like Pop used to do, as far as like saying, Nash, go get your team 50 or 60 and see if you can do that and beat us. Or if not, you're toast, because he can find guys for alley-oop dunks. He can find guys for threes. When he gets you in an advantage, as far as like just him and there's open space going to the rim, the defense is basically toast. He has his way against them. I think the best thing they should do, San Antonio, is kind of live with those pull-up threes over the big guys. So when they do switch, whether it's David Lee, Aldridge, Powell, the big guys just have to say, just don't foul, and kind of live with whether he's going to make those. He made maybe two of like five of them And that's just a percentage the Spurs have to live with. Like I said, you have to pick your poison with him. He's going to get something against your defense. And so that, I think the big guys just have to stay poised as far as like, hey, as long as you get a hand up in his face and he makes that shot. Just, you have to live with it. They can't play too close to him, because then he drives the lane. There he is. He's either scoring or he's getting, finding somebody for a bucket. And so it's just more about discipline as far as like, you know, taking what you have to take one of the things that he's going to do to your defense and just live with it. One thing I really liked about Harden was that he's so patient in the pick and roll. He waits, he kind of just gets the ball back, you know, in a half court set. He observes the floor. He looks at where's his biggest, his best way of getting a switch or finding a teammate. So he'll call one screen, he'll call two screens. He might call the same screen twice in a possession just to get the matchup that he wants, to get either his guy open or to get a driving lane. And he's just so patient. So the Spurs' defense really has their work cut out for trying to limit Harden or contain him as best as they can. He ended up dishing 14 assists for 35 points for his teammates. So when you add that up with his total points, Harden accounted for 55 of the Rockets' points. That's 45%, 44% of their scoring. You know, Trevor Ariza is there as well as a playmaker. He makes 23 points on 14 shots. And then Clint Capela with 20 points on 10 shots. Efficient night for him with 13 rebounds. Again, a lot of that for them is those two guys, they're not creators on their own, but they were just great recipients of being in the right place at the right time off those Harden passes, whether it was Ariza for threes, or it was Capela for those lob dunks or just roast the rim. They both stayed ready. And again, a lot of those points don't happen if the Spurs, one, aren't in transition, aren't giving up transition points because, you know, they took a quick shot or they rushed something or had a turnover. And so Harden's finding guys like Ariza or Capela, or in the pick and roll defense. Again, it comes down to just, you know, stay as disciplined as you can and not letting Harden attack the defense with some space, because then you're basically toast, because he can find either of those guys. And you see how guys who don't usually score 20 points like Ariza and Capela can just go off in one night because of Harden's activity. The Rockets' other three playmakers, I just want to talk about them. Patrick Beverley, he finishes with 7 points on 7 shots. So it was an efficient shooting night, but he still stayed involved. He played 25 minutes and he gathered 4 assists. One thing Beverley did that was great was he was a key factor in that second quarter when the Rockets went on that 21-6 run against the Spurs, with mostly Harden on the bench. So he needs to get some credit for that part. Eric Gordon, he got actually really good looks all game. He didn't make them in the first half, but in the second half, you saw them start going in his buckets. Eric Gordon finishes with 11 points on 8 shots, so he shoots 50%. He collects 4 assists, and he plays 24 minutes. He displayed his driving kick ability, his pick and roll ability. And then Lou Williams, he came off the bench and gives Houston 13 points in 22 minutes on just 8 shots, so 50% shooting as well. Lou, I mean, he's just that quick scorer, can shoot off picks. He can pull up from three. He can hit the spot up three. And again, he was also a big part of that second quarter run with Harden on the bench. I mean, this is the thing about the difference San Antonio's defense has to be prepared for, is that with Memphis, Mike Conley was literally their only playmaker from the outside. You know, they didn't have a lot of guys that can run pick and roll and drive and kick and things like that. The Rockets have four guys. They have Harden, they have Beverley, they have Gordon, and they have Lou Williams. These are guys that are okay. They're comfortable running pick and roll. They're comfortable driving and kicking. They're comfortable shooting threes. I mean, they're all, actually all four of them too, are comfortable pulling up from threes. So that's the thing, is that Spurs' defense has to be so disciplined in this series, because it's going to be tough with all the offensive skill set that these guys possess in Houston. So looking forward to game two now. It's Wednesday, May 3rd. The Rockets again are in San Antonio. It's at 8:30. This is basically, I mean, it's hard to say it's must-win for game two, but it's basically must-win for San Antonio. This is this is huge for them, because this is their home court. I mean, they lose two in San Antonio, and then it's going to be tough to get two in Houston, or even let alone one. You know, and so I think that the momentum of the series could make it kind of even for San Antonio should they pull this game out. But if they get beat, I mean, it's going to feel very close to being a sweep. So some adjustments to look for from the Spurs in game two is, I think they need to slow the pace. Like Pop mentioned, just take quality shots. Try not to turn the ball over. Don't get into as much, as fun as it seems, don't get into one of those run and gun battles with the Rockets, because it gets fun for a few possessions, but then you look up and you're down 20 points because you can't sustain that. You don't have the personnel. I think that Dwayne Dedman's probably going to start. That would be my guess. I think that the Spurs need somebody who can just provide some rim protection, who can take a few of those lobs away from Capela, and You know, Deadman just has to stay disciplined again. He's quick enough to hedge out like Aldridge was on those pick and rolls, and he just needs to stay disciplined. As far as when he gets switched up with Harden, which he will do, contest the three the best you can, but try not to let Harden drive on you, and just get back off him a little bit and give him some space. That way, you know, he doesn't beat you to the rim for either a layup or a bucket for his teammate. One thing that was effective, as I mentioned, was for 2 minutes, the Spurs in the first quarter ran Kawhi at the four. They used it to line up with Powell at the five and Kawhi at the four. I think Jonathan Simmons and Manu and I think Patty Mills, something like that, or Danny Green at the two. Anyway, that lineup was okay. It still got outscored. You know, the Spurs, it's just a few minutes. It works, but the Spurs don't have the personnel to do that for 48 minutes. That's why, you know, the Spurs want to try to avoid going four as much as possible. I mean, going small as much as possible, even when D'Antoni runs Ariza at the four, because they just don't have the personnel equipped for it. I don't think Tony Parker can survive in a lineup like that. Manu Ginobili, you really need Simmons playing at his best, making sure he's not turning the ball over and taking good shots on the other end to run that, or Danny Green hitting some threes and playing obviously good defense to have that quiet the four. So I think it'll work with some minutes, some small increments. I think Pop will use it a little bit more. I think that he's going to see that worked, but I'm not sure you can play a whole game, you know, running Kawhi at the four. Something else I think they might try is putting Davis Bertans or Kyle Anderson at the four, because they need somebody who's quick enough to get back on that Harden Ryan Anderson 2-4 pick and roll. They need somebody who can kind of hedge out on Harden, but then be quick enough to get back onto Anderson for those pick and pop threes. And you saw that Aldridge, Pau Gasol, David Lee, those guys just were not quick enough. They don't have the speed, especially how far Anderson stands out there. Whereas Kyle Anderson and Davis Bertans, they're both kind of like tweeners, like 3-4 kind of players. So they have a little bit more foot speed. And that's crazy saying Anderson has a little bit more foot speed, but he really does to try to get back on defense there. So that could be something as well that you see is maybe changing up some of the personnel and seeing how they do from Pop. And as far as Vegas thinks, you know, they as bad as it was for San Antonio, they were down 39. They were they lost by 27. Las Vegas still has the Spurs winning game two by 5.5 points. That's actually what they were favored by in game one. So for Vegas, obviously, I think they're putting a little bit of trust in the Pop infrastructure as far as, like, you know, they know that the Spurs shouldn't get blown out in a second game. You never know in the playoffs, but Vegas thinks that, you know, the Spurs should be able to make a comeback here and make it a series again on Wednesday. So be sure to check out ProjectSpurs.com. We have a lot of content. We'll be following the Rocket series very, very closely. I'm Paul Garcia.